question number 29536, Mr. Bert Scrivens, Real 3. Now, we're talking about some of the NCO instructors, and you said one of them stood out.
Yes. We were training to line the route for the celebrations, Silver Jubilee. No. It was a celebration in 1939. Anyway, the king was going past. We were lining the route. And he picked on a bloke every now and then. And I was one. And he went on and on and on, finding fault and so on. And finished up with saying, "Listen to me, Squaddy. Don't curl your fingers up at me." And I was standing to attention at the time, you know. "You just do as you're told."
Was he being fair or was he just being...
No, he was... I talked to him later on. Not that day, but I did talk to him later on. I said, "What's all that about?" He said, "Well, what we need is utter and absolute discipline." He said, "And we look down the lines and we pick out those that we think might cause us trouble." He says, "So we provoke it and see what the reactions are." He said, "In your case, it was all right. You buckled down and there, you know, you just were disciplined and you took it." So I said, "Well, thank God for that." So, obviously, psychology was coming into it somewhere. But apart from that, normally, NCOs throughout my whole career. I only got to be a corporal. NCOs on the whole were quite fair.
Now, what about the other ranks? How did you get on to the other lads? Firstly, what were their origins? You know, I mean, were they the same sort of background as yourself? Or...
No, they're all working-class blokes. Two that I had a lot to do with, and which will come in later on, were Westminster Council employees. One who did a job that I don't suppose you've ever seen done. He used to clear the horse manure up using a dustpan and brush in the middle of Newbridge Street, among other places, and dump it and so on. And the other one was a bin man, dustbin man. Both for the Westminster Council. But I didn't meet those until after war was declared.
Well, how did you get on with them, Jen, when you first, you know, when you were a very new recruit, just 18?
We were all much the same.
Were they all the same age? No First World War?
No, they were... No, I don't remember any First World War ones. They were all newish. Those who knew what was going on and helped out those who didn't. And I don't think there was anybody greener than I was.
No bullying?
No.
In a terrorist, it's not very common anyway.
No, it's not common. You're only there for a couple of hours a week sort of business. Hardest thing to get used to is communal bathing and so on. No showers and whatever. Well, no baths, you've got a shower.
Now, the approach was, you were at camp the first 2 weeks of August.
Yeah.
You come back from there. What happened next?
Well, from there, I went back to work in Fleet Street, and I could see from all the... Because there used to be about 6 editions a day in Fleet Street of all the newspapers, and we got all of them. Yeah, I could see that there was real trouble coming up, and it was likely that I would be called up. So I got a bit bolshy and said to my parents, "I'm not going to go... just like that. If they say over the radio, you know, all report your drill, or I'm not going to do that. They can send for me." And so I got home from work one day, still in August, and my mother, with a long face, said, "There's a letter for you," which was most unusual. And it was OHMS, report by 6 o'clock that night to the drill hall.
Do you remember what day it was?
Yeah.
Or roughly?
I think it was Wednesday or Thursday. I'm not too sure.
But you don't remember the date?
Not exactly. It was still in August, though.
Now, what happened? You called up. So they had sent for you.
They had sent for me. I assembled my equipment.
Now, what did your parents think? I mean, because I presume, your brother was already off.
He was in the West Indies at that time. Well, no, he wasn't, actually. I think he was at Curaçao. Wait a minute, let me have a think.
Doesn't matter. What did your mother think? Your parents think?
Well, my mother was very tearful, of course. But it's the old London approach. Well, if you've got to, you've got to. My old man was all for discipline anyway. He was a real Victorian. You know, he said, well, that's it, lad. You, if you've got to go, just make the best of it. So I assembled my kit, put on my uniform. Didn't even know enough to put the spring up in my cap. So I did, laying flat on the top. And got on a bus and went to Balham to report.
And what was happening at Balham that day?
Well, it was pretty well chaotic. There were people moving in all directions. Some, I fear, walked into the drill hall, reported and walked out again. And that was that. What happened to them afterwards, I don't know. But we were assembled in platoons and so on in the drill hall. And that, of course, was the evening. We bedded down where we could, getting a blanket, and bed on the floor, and that was it. But, yes, something that happened in the camp. I'd got blister on my right foot, and it had turned septic. And it got very bad about 2 days later. And I went to see the MO, and he put me on light duties, excuse boots. And that's that. I didn't do much else from there on. Mecca, I think, did the catering. They sent in kitchen staff and whatever to serve up whatever they served up. And that was that.
You just stayed in the drill hall?
Just stayed in the drill hall and sandbagged the outside of it.
Now tell me about that. I mean, you'd be watching rather than doing, I presume.
Well,
sandbagged, and would you sandbag other places in Balham and around, or was it just?
No, we just did the drill hall, and yes, we had to sandbag it properly, with the corners tucked in, all squared up, and built the proper way.
Where would you do it? Just around the entrance or around?
Round the whole of the front of it, mainly. I don't suppose we thought the bombs would hit the back. But, well, that's the kind of mentality we had.
That's what it was for. It was for bombs. It wasn't to defend it. It was just bomb defence.
Well, we expected bombs more than anything else. We didn't expect to be invaded. Who dared to do that? And that went on until...
Were you there? Was this place you'd have the declaration of war while you were at the drill hall?
Yes. We were all assembled when war was declared.
Did you hear the broadcast?
We did.
Can you tell us exactly what happened that day in the drill hall? Because not many people can remember it now.
Now, we were all assembled, and somebody brought in a radio, and we heard the broadcast that war was declared. We are now at war with Germany, etc., etc. We were then dismissed. We'd had some drill in how to get out of the building, gas-proofing certain rooms with a wet blanket.
Tell me about that, because I've not heard that before.
Haven't you? If you wanted to gas-proof a room, the theory was that you hung blankets at the doors and windows and you doused them with water, which would stop the gas coming into the room. That was the theory.
So there wasn't any special chemical, it was just water?
Just water, yeah. Well, it's like before gas masks were issued in World War One. We were World War One type mentality. There's no doubt about that. It was World War One type.
You weren't doing much at all with your...
No, I wasn't doing much at all, except some of these drills where we had certain duties to do in the event of being bombed, whatever. And I know when war was declared and we were dismissed, one of the platoon officers, second lieutenant, I won't give you his name, charged out into the middle of Balham High Road, which had trams running up and down it in the centre, and ordinary traffic and so on, buses and ordinary traffic, waving a 45 revolver, which was illegal. He should have been carrying a 38, and screaming, "Everybody in the shelters, war's declared," and immediately after the doings, the sirens went. After the declaration, the sirens went. So the rumour immediately went around, they're over Red Hill, they'll be here shortly. Why Red Hill and such, I don't know, but that was the rumour. And he went charging out into Balham High Road and caused utter chaos by stopping all the traffic, waving a revolver around. My job to start with was to go into one of these gas-proof rooms and wait there for further instructions, which I did. Got very boring. And we waited and waited until the all-clear came and nothing had happened. I presume that was a practice. But after that, we just carried on as normal, doing whatever. Personally, I was sent for by the captain, who was battalion quartermaster. He said, "You're off sick, aren't you?" And I said, "Yeah." Rob, I think his name was, Captain Rob. He said, "I hear you can use a typewriter." I said, "That's right." He said, "Well, I'm looking for somebody to do my clerical work. Can you do it?" I said, "Yeah, well, I can. I can type." Well, thank God for that. I was probably the only bloke in the battalion who could. So I was made temporarily his clerk, which was when I met up with the two Westminster Council blokes I referred to earlier. They were stormen. I think the staff at that time was the quartermaster, two stormen and myself for the battalion, something like that.
What were your duties?
Well, there weren't anything. It wasn't very much. I typed whatever needed to be typed. I filed things if they needed to be filed. General clerical duties. Not much else at that stage. And occasionally I ran messages because I got permission to take my motorbike, unreliable as it was, and park it in the yard at the back and to use it, which was handy when we got a night off, as we sometimes did. I could go up to my sister who lived in Sanderstead and stay there overnight. Although the first time I went, I remember thinking to myself, how the hell am I going to get up there? I knew my mother had gone up to stay with her. And I thought, how am I going to get up to Croydon and then on to Sanderstead? So I don't know what possessed me, but I walked out into the middle of Balham High Road and there's an open car coming down. Well, a lot of cars were open in those days. And I waved my arms at it and I said, "Are you going to Croydon, Wayne?" And he said, "Yes." I said, there's a bloke and a girl in there. And I said, "Can you give me a lift?" And he said, "Yes." And that's what happened. He took me up to Sanderstead. Petrol, of course, for my motorbike was very difficult. I had no ration book, and it wasn't official, but I usually managed to scrounge some somewhere, somehow.
Anything else? You seem to have been there, according to your form, till about the 15th of September, before you move.
It's somewhere around. No, it's probably later than that. I'm not too sure.
When do you think it was?
It might have been a couple of weeks later.
Into October, then?
Maybe. But I think it was September, the end of September sometime.
And
we went to Chapelwood Manor, Nutley, in the Ashdown Forest.
Now, what was the setup there?
The companies, the rifle companies, were dispersed around the country. Where, I don't know. The headquarters, because I was still with the quartermaster, was assembled in Chapelwood Manor. Battalion headquarters was the manor itself. So was the messing, and officers' mess, of course. And let me see, ration department, various odds and ends, administrative stuff. The quartermaster's stores took over the stable blocks.
Now, what were the quartermaster's stores? What was in them at that time?
In them was everything that a battalion needed.
Which would be?
Which, except ammunition, and except arms. Uniforms, equipment, tents, sometimes. What else did we have?
Food?
Blankets, boots, yes. Well, that comes under uniforms, boots. Yeah. Food? No. That was in the manor itself and came under messing and cooks and so on. Didn't have anything to do with it then. Food became under the quartermaster later.
So you carried on your thing. How's your fort? Did it get better?
That was better by then.
But I stayed.
I sort of got transferred.
That's a quite an important thing then, that bad fort, because that's where...
That started everything for me. It decided my whole war career, really, as we'll see later on.
Okay, so what happened at Chapelwood Manor? You went there, what happened there?
Well, we did a series of exercises.
What type of thing were these?
Well, when you're with the quartermaster stores, you've got lorry loads of equipment and such, including food this time. And you went in convoy to wherever the convoy went. And you parked your lorry. If necessary, and you were told to, you dug a slit trench and you just waited. Or sometimes you just parked by the side of the road and you waited and waited and waited until somebody told you to start driving again. That was it. What we were doing, I don't know. There's nobody so ill-informed as a private soldier. We did one of those around the Eastbourne area. I do know that. And I used to take messages to brigade headquarters. Sometimes I went in a 1500 weight lorry. Sometimes I collected, just trying to think what I did collect. Let me think. I don't know, to be honest. Uniform, usually, I expect. It was a big deal. I had a lot of time to ourselves.
You still have your bike with you, or you had to leave that at home?
Oh, that had been, it had broken down completely, and I left that at home. I used a bicycle on occasion. Terrible things, with a back-pedalling brake, which is inclined to throw you off. And also, with the barrack block, the stable block, there was a diesel generator, which did the lights for the whole of the estate. Terrible stuff. If you got 40 watts out of it, you were damn lucky. It was a terrible thing.
Were you looking after that?
No. The chauffeur and the... what the hell did they call him? Bailiff. Were still sitting in their cottages, which, as usual with estates, were on the edge of the estate, with their own driveway, the chauffeur, the bailiff, and there was one other cottage, three cottages in all. And eventually, the quartermaster staff took over that cottage, and we moved out of the stable area. We'd had the rooms above the stables. I was right underneath the clock tower, which chimed every quarter, which was not funny.
That's much better once you're in the cottage.
Yes. We then had access to rations because the regimental quartermaster sergeant was with us as well. He had one of the bedrooms, and we others were down on the floor in whatever rooms we could. But we were inclined to cater for ourselves.
And what was the food like?
It was very monotonous because the cooks had a habit, no matter what the meat was, you had roasted meat one day, and didn't matter what the joint was, it was roasted one day and stewed the next. Invariable, that was right the way through the week. You knew what you're going to get. Very plain, very stodgy.
Enough of it?
Well, plenty to eat, yes. No problems at all that I could see, except it was very monotonous.
What recreational facilities were there for you?
None.
Could you go out to the pub?
You could go out, yes, but the nearest pub was a couple of miles away in Nutley. We had a canteen. So you could get
Tell us about the canteen. What did the canteen offer you?
Very little, to be quite honest.
Was it a wet canteen? You know, served beer?
Yeah, wet. Wet canteen. Yeah. But it hadn't got much to sell anyway. All canteens.
Darts or billiards or...
Well, no billiards. I presume there was a dartboard. I don't remember seeing one, but I presume so. I didn't go there very often.
And you didn't go to the pub either?
No.
What did you do?
Well, about the most momentous thing I did was borrow the bailiff's shotgun and 12 bore, and a group of us went out rabbiting. Not that we knew what rabbits were like, or had anything to do with rabbits, but we decided to go rabbiting. And the chauffeur kept ferrets. So, of all places, we went onto the lawn, right behind the manor, which went on forevermore. And we bunged the ferret down the hole, which we presume was a rabbit hole, and waited for it to come out, and we took turns having the shotgun. When it came to my turn, we put the ferret down, and there was a lovely stirring, and a head popped out, and I shot it, and it was the ferret, which made me extremely very popular with the chauffeur who owned it.
You killed it.
Oh, I shot it dead, yeah, there's no doubt. Well, blimey, it was within about 2 feet of where it was. And we went rabbiting a couple of times, but we didn't have any success at that stage. No, not really. Oh, occasionally we went into Uckfield, to the cinema there, but that was a long hike. That's very occasional.
How did you get on with the locals? Or did you not see
many? We didn't see many of them. All I do remember is, yes, while we were there, Norway was on. And we were all assembled, and we were told about Norway. And those under 21 were accepted, which was me. And the others, they said, we are looking for volunteers. Everybody one pace forward who wishes to volunteer. And I expected the old cinema bit, you know, everybody steps forward. And not a soul moved. Not one single solitary soul. Didn't matter to me because, as I say, I was underage anyway and I couldn't have gone. But I was quite shocked, that, I must admit. The only other...
So they weren't sent?
Hmm?
They weren't sent? Then,
no. No, they were looking for volunteers in those days. That's how stupid we were. The only other thing I can remember at a mass parade like that was an identity parade, looking for a bloke who'd given one of the local girls a child. That was, when you got the girls walking along the ranks, looking at each face intently, you begin to sweat a bit. Even if you didn't know her from Adam, but there it goes.
Did she find her father?
Well, not with our lot. I don't know whether she did or didn't.
Was there much bull, spit and polish, preparing for kit inspections, you know, that kind of thing?
Not for me. In the rifle companies, yes, I expect so. But we had to keep our uniforms and buttons. Well, by then we'd got battle dress. I do remember that. And we had the first intake of, what were they called? We called them intakes.
Conscripts,
yeah. And I remember we set up the stables with all the kit and so on. Oh, yes, I remember going and getting uniforms for that lot too, taking lorries and...
Were they well received? I mean, they were conscripts, you were territorials, and slightly...
Oh, different. Yeah.
Were they made welcome, you know, nicely, or were they...
No, you treated them as you found them sort of business. And they were issued, being at headquarters, you know, they were issued with uniforms, complete. I won't say they always fitted, because if you've got too many of one size and not of another, they were inclined to get the wrong size. Told to see the battalion tailor. But on the whole, it was quite good.
We're talking about your time when you were, at this at Nutley, basically, Chapelwood Manor. Anything happened while you were there other than what we've said?
Yeah. Yes, we started training. Well, the recruits came in and they were given uniforms and the essential equipment. And then they were sent out to the companies who acted themselves as training.
Now, what had happened to the... Because weren't you up to full strength beforehand?
We were, but they were sent extra,
right, so
as trainees, and we became the trainers, although we were only territorial and we didn't know beef from a bull's foot. But
so how did the unit do at training? I mean, what did that
well,
do?
They did very well. They were assembled into platoons and so on, and they were given the basic instructions, foot drill, usual discipline things. And one of the NCOs, the sergeant, I was talking to when I was asking about how they got on, he said, we're looking for one thing,